Ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, we are going to proceed with a new subject today. After the world political, we want to talk about art and a little bit about education. And I want to make it simple so you can all follow the things being said yourself further. To begin with, you see a picture, a painting. This is one of the paintings of Steiner himself. He painted that. You see the motif, two figures, polarity of color, blue and reddish, mediated by the neutral zone of the green. And this is the way he depicts the world powers, the supersensible of Ahriman and Lucifer, which play into our lives, which play into nature, and which are, of course, present in art also. Just an example of him as a painting artist. And you will see the extraordinary thing with Steiner is, and art, he was active on all levels of art, which for some people is a great difficulty because they can't believe that one human being can be so universally gifted and produce valuable things on different levels, even already in art, apart from the other activities of anthroposophy, natural science, biodynamics, etc. The universality of Steiner is a great problem for some people because they have no examples of a similar universality. You have to go back maybe to Goethe or to Leonardo da Vinci, and that poses a problem. Now we will look at this problem only in the sphere of art, where Steiner was also active on all levels. Now these levels are linked with the human being. So let's first look at the structure of the human being. You will find that characterized in the basic writings like Theosophy, Occult Science, and others. So if we look at the human being, we have the basic part called physical body for everyone. Then next comes the etheric body. In the physical body, giving it life, etc. Then we have the astral body, seat of all the passions and phenomena of consciousness. And then we have the sensual being called ego. And then we have three higher beings. Spirit self, spirit life, and spirit man. And this is just one point of view in a certain lecture in 1914 that Steiner makes this parallelism between our sevenfold total nature and the individual arts. Now you can guess, looking at this poor scheme, which art would fit in where. Let's start here. The physical body, in extension, if you put these principles of physical body out, you come to the first, from that point of view, art of architecture. if you take the physical body, you get an understanding of architecture. Sorry, the poor writing. If you take the etheric body, then you get an understanding of the sculpture, art of sculpture. And note, it is known that, for example, the Greek artists usually didn't use models for forming the human body in sculpture, because they were still able to get it all out of their own etheric physical. So they used no models and made wonderful plastic sculpture architecture. So we have the architecture, we have the sculpture, and then we have an art which is the representative of what is going on in the human astral body. All sorts of consciousness phenomena, joy, pain, not spatial, but in time, so to speak. Then we come to painting. Then, if we go on, we find another art, which is the reflection actually of the ego, but not directly, but as it is reflecting in the astral. Then you come to a very important art. The ego reflecting itself in the unconscious part of the astral leads you to the understanding what music is. So music has to do a lot with what is going on in our astral, which is only to a very tiny bit conscious. Then we have a higher art, which is the reflection in the ego of what is called a higher member, spirit self, which will be fully developed in the future, in the Slavic, in the next cultural epoch. So we have another art reflected in the ego from the spirit self, which we call poetry. And then we have an art which is using the higher equivalent to the etheric body, which is the spirit life. And this is a new art, completely new. You read me. And then we have a future art, even more future than Eurythmy, which sometimes is called social art as the highest, which of course is the less completed now today, as we can see with all our wonderful social harmonies and disharmonies. That's a high art in the future, spirit man. And then we have this equivalent, which one can think about it. And there is an interesting problem, because one art is missing here that was obviously in the life and work of Steiner of greatest importance. And I just refer our listeners to the basic book of anthroposophy, which is called The Philosophy of Spiritual Activity, his earliest main big work. And in the end of this book, you find a chapter in which Steiner states, all true philosophers were mastering the art of thinking. So the art of thinking is a very important art in Steiner's. And he was evidently a master of it. But strangely, in this scheme here, it's missing. So some modern critics play with these contradictions, and some would say, well, when Steiner was giving this lecture in 1914, this is a 1914 lecture, he probably just forgot about the art of thinking. I'm sure there are some people who think, yes, why not? Right? It's human. But it is a bit short-sighted. Is there any other possibility to look at the problem? And I think there is. Because if you go through, you see the ego has a relation, an indirect, to two arts, poetry and music. But is there maybe also a possibility of finding an art which has only to do with this? Because an art like poetry, which has a reflection of an even higher member like the spirit self, is something that needs a higher inspiration, which is natural for good poets. You need an inspiration. Or you need also an unconscious inspiration in music. So the ego in both directions is not only in itself, either with the astral or with the higher spirit self. But if you have an art or something in which no inspiration plays in and no influence from the subconscious plays in, you have the art of thinking. Because in thinking, it's not a question of inspiration, like in poetry, and it's not a question of what comes up, maybe in a wonderful way, from the subconscious. So we have the art of thinking as related directly. May I? Yes. Directly. To the ego, and only to the ego. This has never been explained by critics and followers because they usually don't see the problem. But if you take the words of the early Steiner, that there is an art of thinking, you have to struggle with why is it not here? And if you don't think, well, he just forgot about it, then this is the only solution, that it is here, but it is, so to speak, hidden. And it plays as an art of thinking into all other arts. All other arts need thinking, even for building their technique, for understanding the materials they're working with. And the art of thinking is always permeating all the others. In that sense, we can say it's the central universal art of all these arts. The upmost, by the way, has not been put on the blackboard. It's, we could call it the social art. So that would mean the most central art is related to the ego and has not to wait for inspirations. If you have the art of thinking, you are fully in the level of your egohood, and you don't wait for inspirations till you have the next thought. That would not be the right method. So if you get this together, you can understand why Steiner, who was a great master artist of thought from the beginning, you could say he was artist from the beginning. But as he was artist of the art of thinking, which permeates all the others, that explains that he was able to unfold in the course of his life, also as an artist of architecture, sculpture, printing, painting, music, poetry, eurythmy. That's only an extension of the principle of artistic faculty that he had from the very beginning. Many people don't see that, and they think, well, he was a scientist, wasn't he? Goethe, editor, and then he suddenly makes sculpture and makes even drama, poetry, mystery dramas. How is that possible? And they don't see that the source of these various artistic creations of his is the central art of thinking, which he mastered from the very beginning. So that is a solution of an interesting problem that is often not even seen because it's just missing. And on the other hand, he claims that's the basic, actually the most important, the art of thinking. Now, having said that, which sheds a light to the universality of a source which can fructify all other levels of art from the core art of thinking. I want to make a simple statement about what is actually essential in the various arts: architecture, sculpture, painting, music, poetry. Let's say what is not the aim for any of these. If you are a real artist, the aim is not to repeat what is already there in nature. That's boring even. It's unartistic. Just to make a copy of what is already there is not the aim of art, say, of painting. Of course, there are modes of paint, in a way, painting, so-called naturalism, that just shows, of course, not in a good way, because it's never as perfect as nature. A tree that you immediately see is a tree and this and that. But it is in a way boring because and uncreative, because you don't create anything really new. But you have the ideal of reproducing what is real. And to reproduce the real is not a real artistic aim. Or take drama. A good example for me is, you could of course take many other examples, the dramas of Shakespeare. Has Shakespeare put on stage real characters? Maybe people that he met in his life? And then a biographer who could try to find out who is the real figure behind, say, Othello. Oh, this is the guy that he often met in a pub or this and that. And that's a total misunderstanding. Because if you know a little bit the dramas of Shakespeare, they reveal that, of course, Shakespeare was a good onlooker, observer. And Othello is something everyone carries in himself, the tendency to become terribly jealous to such a degree that you become a murderer. And Shakespeare was able to see these tendencies in every human soul. And then he showed what could be. He didn't show a real picture of a realistic Othello that he had met in the pub or in the neighborhood, but it showed something in the human nature that can come out in everyone. The same with a very modern character, I feel, is in the same drama. That's the man who helps, if you can call this a help, Othello to become raging with jealousy. That's the man who draws the strings on him, coldly playing with him. That's Iago. Iago is the perfect intrigue maker. And again, you can say, where did Shakespeare meet this Iago in his life? In order to answer, then he just made a copy of it. No, he never made a copy. But he used the Iago in all of us to make a living dramatic figure. That is the artistic principle, basically, that you go beyond reality that is already there. That means you have to have a sense of something which is seed-like. And if you look at the seed-like in the psyche of human being, you find the seed for the murderer, for the intrigue, for the I don't know what, in every human being. And you just take the liberty to show what could become of seed A or B and C. And I would even say I make a bridge to the education, which we later go into and more deeply. If people in their youth would see or do see good reproductions, say, of Shakespeare's plays, and if they see also the terrible murderers, and by the way, in art you can say there are good murders and there are bad murders, dilettantic murders, and you can find it really great to watch how a murderer is portrayed on stage, which you should never do in life, of course. And my vision on that is, if people who do a lot of bad things in their real deeds, like politicians of today, if they would have seen enough artistic performances with these bad deeds on stage, that would relieve them of realizing these tendencies that they all have, that we all have in their own life. So imagine the uncultivated, more or less primitive soul of the Bushies. You know, they were swimming in this artistic atmosphere of Shakespeare's plays enough. Then they would lose the wish to become a real murderer or liar or intrigue. That would show the important element of art for education. That you then show, yes, I could become a devil. And I'm not just a good person, but I have the tendency to become a very evil person. And happily, it doesn't happen in real life, maybe because of education and society. But imagine these breaks of education and society fall away, then suddenly you are a monster. Because the monstrosity is as well in the human soul deeply as higher virtues of becoming a very pure, saintly nature. So Shakespeare had a look on the human nature which was total, and he saw the tendencies to everything. And taking the tendencies real and ask you, what can become of this, leads to his figures, so to speak, in good and in the bad. Someone who was, I think, having a similar view on this, of course, would be Goethe. Because Goethe said of himself, he thinks there is no human trait, good or evil, which he would say he has nothing of it in himself. He said he was so honest to say, of course, there is the criminal in me, the liar in me. It's just not dominant, but the tendency is also there. And that was the way I think Shakespeare was able to look at the human nature. And it's much more important that we find out that we have these tendencies in ourselves than to think, well, I've never killed anyone, so I have nothing to do with a murderer. That's too simple. And there art can come in showing not the real, make a photography of what you are now. Maybe if you're now a bourgeois, the artist would just put a bourgeois on the stage. And that is not artistic. But if you show in a bourgeois, that he has a real demonic tendency that doesn't show yet, then you do something and go beyond the real and show not the real, but what could become real. And that's the methods of becoming artistically active. So that means you have to have a sense for the latent, which I call tendency. A tendency is a real thing there, but it is not yet able to dominate all the sides of the thing concerned. It's a kept back thing. And the artist can come and say, well, I lose these breaks and show what could happen if this one tendency would have free play. That's a basic thing. And it will lead you immediately beyond naturalism as something unnecessary. Because even if you paint an apple in a naturalistic way, there's certainly something which you cannot go as perfect as nature has done it itself. So to try to copy nature, to copy the so-called real, is just not what is the artist's task. This is even applicable to the art of thinking, in which I claimed Steiner was an absolute master. That would mean he was able to take some thoughts that were not fully thought to the end, which I think most of our thoughts have this character. We don't go to the end of it. We don't draw the conclusion. And he did that all the time. So he saw tendencies which were not finished and gave them form. I give you an example. He once speaks about psychoanalysis and quotes, I don't know, was it Freud or whoever, who said, well, the whole culture of human being is a kind of a sublimation of the inferior, brutal nature of man. And Steiner said, okay, if that is true, it must be applied to psychoanalysis itself. Psychoanalysis is just then the sublimation of a brutal side of the human nature. And in that sense, the tendency concept is central for understanding all art, including the art of thinking, in which Steiner really was a master. You can see that often in his lecture, that he draws the conclusion, the implication, which is not often seen by us, because we only usually think things half. So that's maybe a way of looking at the function of art being realistic, but to the real belong also the tendencies which have not been realized already. And that's the field of interest for the artist. You have to become tendentious, so to speak, and see not only what is, but what could become, based on what is latent. So you have to be an admirer of latent realities and not only of finished. And that's a basic in looking at all art, including the art of thinking. Now let me come back for the end. This is a brief sketch, of course. And maybe I give you the basic literature to it. There are two things. A very early lecture by Steiner he gave in Vienna in, I think, 18, I don't know, very early. And he often referred to this lecture as containing even the basic of anthroposophy. And it was given in Vienna in 1888, when Steiner was 27 years old. By the way, at the end of this lecture, a man came up to him, very well known, very appreciated by him, who was a very good scholastic knower, very knowledgeable. And he said to him, Dr. Steiner, what you just said about art and so on is spoken out of the spirit of Thomas Aquinas. And this word was like a rocket for Steiner. He was, of course, knew at that time there's reincarnation and so on, but he was not interested in finding his own past life. So when a man came after a lecture and said very seriously, what you just said comes out of Aquinas, he was shocked in a positive way, and he asked himself the question later, why does he say this? And he found out he was so deeply connected with that time. Probably, this is what I'm saying, had a relationship with Steiner in a former life. That this was like the revelation from outside to of something of his own former life, in which he was already a master of the art of thinking. If you look a bit at the work of Aquinas, it's splendid, it's brilliant, and it was a good source, a good background for the continuation of Steiner himself in the field of anthroposophy later. So this lecture is key. He speaks about what I try to say in a few words, that naturalism is boring, is superfluous, but to find the seed in things which are not revealing themselves, that is what you have to do as an artist. And by doing this, you go beyond nature. You don't make a superfluous creation. You find this lecture under the title Goethe als Vater einer neuen Ästhetik, Goethe as the father of a new aesthetic. And I think it's easily to be found in the works of Steiner. It belongs to the rare examples where Steiner himself edited a lecture later and as a little book. And the other source I used in the beginning was a lecture in 1914 called Art in the Light of Mystery Wisdom. That's where he makes the parallel of the human being and the basic seven art forms. And of course, the philosophy of spiritual activity has been mentioned already. Now, one of the deepest works of art, of course, of Steiner was his work of the first Goetheanum as an architect. This has not been found in the world before him, no copy. There were cupola things, but there were no double cupola buildings anywhere. And unfortunately or not, it was built in wood. And I will come back to this architecture in another lecture on Steiner's core mission, reincarnation and karma, because it was a building that would stimulate people to become receptive to this thought, the forms already. And it was a real tragedy that it was burnt down in the New Year's Eve night, 1922, 100 years ago. And let me, for the end of this little lecture, give a sketch. This building should have been built in Munich. In Munich was also the intention of Richard Wagner, who built what later was built in Bayreuth. But the authorities didn't allow it. And the authorities, especially, I think the church institutions, were against Steiner erecting his building in Munich, which would have attracted a lot more people right ahead in 1912 or 13. There were many artists and all. So he went to Switzerland and he was offered a land not far from here in which he could build the Goetheanum. And then he went there with his wife for a couple of days for a rest after a long lecture series. And in the night he spent there, he must have had, I guess, a foresight of what would come if he builds a building there, namely fire destruction. Because Marie Steiner says, after this night there, he came to breakfast in a very, not excoriated, that's maybe not the right word, but disturbed way, irritated, didn't speak. So he probably had the foresight. And yet he decided to build. Obviously, it would have been possible to protect. And that was a test for his members. According to some people like Polzer, it was a test whether the members were appreciating what was happening in front of their eyes to such a degree that they would help to protect this building. And there were many people who had a kind of a foresight of this coming catastrophe and didn't wake up. A very interesting example happened in June 1922. In a maybe the most brilliant lecture course ever given by Steiner in public in Vienna, more or less entitled East, West, or West, East Congress on Anthroposophy, its methods of research on Anthroposophy and history, Anthroposophy and psychology, which was in Vienna, of course, very popular, and sociology. And at the end, he gave a sketch of what he understands by threefold social order. Brilliant. 2,000 people, all of all walks of life. And during that congress, there was a member, a pupil of Steiner's from Prague, who had a visionary experience. She was not sitting far away from Steiner. And she saw suddenly, during a lecture of a pupil of Steiner's, a column enveloped in smoke. In that minute, she writes in her memoirs, the gaze of Steiner came immediately, very intensively, looked at her, as he immediately realized what she has seen. And I think by this intensive gaze, he wanted to tell her, never forget what you have seen here, which means he was aware of what was coming. And then later, she goes with her husband, visits the Goetheanum for the first time. She hasn't seen it before. And Steiner explains the statue, paintings, this and that. And at the end, when they want to go again, farewell, she turns to her and says, Frau Klima, that was her name, didn't you want to ask something? She looks at her husband and she doesn't know what he means. Second time, Frau Klima, Didn't you want to ask something? She doesn't know. And the third time, Frau Klima, didn't you want to ask something? Silence. And when she has gone home, and when the catastrophe has arrived, the burning, in the New Year's Eve night, afterwards, it just suddenly dawns on her what she was expected to ask. What does this mean, what I have seen there? He was awaiting that she was conscious of an experience which was so much linked with the reality that then it became real. But I nevertheless don't think, especially with this example, it was a fatality. But if people would have realized what was at stake and how the opposition against Steiner's work was growing, especially after this Congress in Vienna, it was the beginning of hard attacks. And after 6 or 7 months, the Goetheanum, a wonderful building, we talk about that later, was in ashes. And in between you have such an experience of somebody who, by saying what she has seen, would have made it possible for Steiner to talk to other people about it and to awaken them. We are in a dangerous situation. Don't think it is not real, the threats. There were threats in periodicals that this Dorner building will soon be in ashes and so on. And then that was a very important thing happening in Vienna, in Witzen, 1922. There are others, but I wanted to show that, which in a way demonstrate that Steiner was from the beginning in 1912, with this bad night, to the fire, present of what would happen. Even during the night of the fire, he was giving a lecture, and there are symptoms for the fact that he was absolutely conscious when the fire was raging, that it was raging. But he was not allowed to protect it himself. He could have maybe advised and helped. When people came with these experiences, and there were many things happening, but people didn't wake up. So he had to see that his own work was totally destructed. There is a spiritual side of that. Maybe we can speak about it in another talk, meaning the spiritual Goetheanum is like a seed for the future. And I want to close with a prophetic remark of Steiner's. Before the building was finished, in 1914, he said, there will be a time in Europe where you will have cupola buildings like the Goetheanum all over. And he said, this time will be 2086, the year. That's about 60 years or so from now. And he said that in 1914, looking at the end of the century, the year 2000, and the year 2000 was used as a mirror line, because 2086 is as far from 2000 as 1914, when he spoke about this, is before. It was a riddle for me a long time, why 2086, till I found this is a mirror reality, and he looked through across the threshold of the millennium, which is so decisive. We know that what happened in 9/11, the incarnation of Ahriman, he looked in beyond this threshold, and then he came to the cupola buildings. Now we can be sure the spiritual essence of the Goetheanum building which was reduced to ashes, is behind the future architectural impulse which will come. So that's also a positive side of it. Well, by that I want to close the little talk about art, the human being, and art and the life of Steiner. Thank you.